Welcome to the Life at Fenastra podcast. This is a podcast where we speak with the humans, the people behind Fenastra. We'll be speaking with the wonderful folks who make up the incredible global team here at Fenastra and what makes each of them unique to not just the company, but to the world. My name is Gurren, the video producer for Employer Brand, and I'll be your go-to guy for this podcast. Having conversations like the one I just had with Sarita, the head of diversity, equity, and inclusion here at Fenastra, is just one of the reasons why I love recording these. We spoke about Sarita's journey in D&I so far, why belonging is such an important part of working in an organization like Fenastra, and the important tasks that she's taken on, and much more. Honestly, the first time I spoke with Sarita, I knew that having her on an episode of this podcast was going to be a great idea. And so I had so much fun recording this, not just because we had jokes, but because it was interesting to see her story, see her perspective, but also try and get a little insight as to her motivations as to why she does what she does. So take a listen to this and you'll see why it was such a fun recording.
Hello, how are you, Gurren?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Honestly, I know we've tried to reschedule this a bunch of times, but I'm so grateful that we've been able to do this finally.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, thank you. So I guess let's jump into it. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
Sure. So what do I do? So I am the head of diversity, equity, and inclusion here at Fenastra, based in our Atlanta office. And what do I do? So, you know, I excite, I engage, yeah, I inspire, definitely. I have tough conversations, right? I challenge, I help people, I think. And then I help them think again. Shout out to Adam Grant. I don't know if you heard the book Think Again, but yeah. I love it, Adam Grant. But I help build spaces where employees can really be the truest, realest version of themselves. And I say really in order for the organizations to thrive. But I make sure that we're also focused on kind of enriching the communities we serve, especially my passion area is the underserved community. Mm. So that's what I do.
And you said something very important that you said, that you challenge. And mm-hmm. I think that's so important for progress. I think Absolutely. If we're not just obviously in our daily jobs, but in our communities, I think we need to start challenging the leaders and, you know, people within the communities in order for us to progress. Because if there's no one who does things like you, mm-hmm. I feel like we're kind of stuck in a loop of doing the same thing over, you know, the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So yeah, I think that's what you described there is very much your role, not just, I guess, in the community, but turn it back to kind of companies and corporations. Is people in these higher positions need to be challenged.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a bad thing, right? We're not saying challenge in a negative way. Challenge in a way that's pushing and encouraging different ways of thinking and acting and behaving, right? 100%. To elevate, right?
Yep, exactly. When I first spoke with you, my first thought was, I need to have her on a podcast. I feel like you've got so much to say. I feel like you've got so much to share. So why don't you, what is your story so far? Like, who is Sarita? Like, why don't you kind of go into that?
Yeah, sure. You know, Gurren, many people at Fenastra, if they've met me or had one-on-one conversations, I always ask this question of like, how do you identify? Because yes. I feel like that question allows you to almost instantly get a taste for, or at least peep through the window of this person's life experiences and the way that they move and interact through the world. And it's interesting how people decide to answer that question. So my story so far, I think in a nutshell, is about I'm from a working class family. I've been working since I was 15 years old. I am a wife, I'm a mother. I say I'm a servant leader, but my story is like this young girl coming from a working class family, Midwestern girl from Ohio. I ended up doing very well in high school. I ended up getting an academic and needs-based scholarship to the Ohio State University.
The Ohio.
That's right. Yep. And from there, I ended up staying and also received my master's degree in labor and human resources from Fisher College of Business there. And then I got my first job at NCR Corporation. And that was, you know, where I had been 12 years prior to joining Fenastra in a variety of leadership roles. So, or not leadership roles, but a variety of roles. I say my career journey there was like a jungle gym. So I started in global process improvement, green belt certification, standing up HR service delivery models, to employee relations, labor relations with supporting US and Canada, to doing a stint on our HRIS team, implementing Workday and being the release manager, really focused on change management and communications. Then I became an HR business partner supporting finance and hospitality and banking. And I left them. My last role was the executive director of talent, diversity and culture. Because at that point, I was like, I feel like I knew enough to be dangerous in a lot of different areas. I was like, where do I really want to hone in my area of expertise? And that's when I went in that talent, culture and diversity role. And then it just so happened that I was tapped by an old NCR colleague, Shira, who worked for Finestra. She's no longer with Finestra, but she tapped me and was like, would you be interested in a DE&I role? And that's how I landed at NCR. And so lots of, interesting experiences throughout high school to now. But that's kind of my story so far.
You have been a part of something, I guess, aside from, the school and all that kind of stuff, your extracurriculars. I think you've always been a part of something. And I think even your role as the head of, Global Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, you're almost responsible to kind of, encourage people to be belonging, right? You're almost, you're encouraging people to kind of be a part of the company, be a part of things within the company, but also do they belong within the immediate teams? I don't know, and the wider community. Like, can you talk about how culture and how important it is to feel like you're part of something is, not just, in your everyday life, but also, in the company.
Mm-hmm. Just listening to you talk just made me realize how I love being a part of things that are bigger than myself. That it gives me life. And even if we think about the word culture, right, from a foundational perspective, whether it's customs, the beliefs, the arts, the food, the music, those are things people think about, the language and religion. It's just the institutions of a people. And if I think of my two boys and when I think about culture for them and their ethnicities, right? So my husband, his mom is from Sierra Leone. His dad was from Jamaica. I'm African-American. Well, my parents are African-American. I consider myself and my boys to be Black, more like the diaspora. Yes. But when you think about the cultures of Black people moving through the cultures of my husband from a UK perspective with those identities and me from a US perspective, and then how our blended experience and is shaping our boys who are raised in Georgia, the South versus the North, right? And those cultural things, like at every level, whether that's a race and ethnicity, whether that's a country perspective, whether that's a state or city perspective, all of those things shape who you are and how you act and how you behave and what you kind of foods and music and things that you like. And then you mentioned kind of my sorority life. It was funny. I had forgot we talked about that, but I am a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, and we are a public service organization founded on scholarship, service, and sisterhood, right? And we have this like 5-point programmatic thrust, so economic development, educational development, physical mental health, political awareness and involvement, international awareness and involvement. I feel like I'm online right now, like quoting the 5-point programmatic thrust. But I really feel like the relationships, the sisters that I have, my line sisters, but I can go anywhere around the world and you will find more than likely a woman that's a member of Delta Sigma Theta. You can put a call out and be like, crazy. My line sister is here. My sister is here, right? And have that connection. But being a part of that organization, it really instilled something in me and it changed my perspective on what I believed my responsibility was and is to doing more, to doing, my part in helping to alleviate the plight of women or the underserved or just doing my part to shape the global community. And just those relationships that I built. And then even if we look at culture from a company context, right? It's like, how we do what we do in the workplace, right? Are we truly inclusive? Are we collaborative? Are we flexible? Are we bureaucratic, right? It's the good and bad of the cultures. And how are we being, or how do we create that culture of innovation or belonging, like you mentioned, right? And I think Finestra, I love how we say doing well by doing good, because we know that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And an organization can really only maximize its output, its profits, its impact, right? When its employees feel that they're valued, feel that they're cared for, feel that they're respected.
Right.
And that's no matter how different they are. It's no matter what role they're playing within the or grade level or region, right? They're in the company. It's they need to feel that their uniqueness is something that they can bring and they can show up, and we can all be different, but we can all feel like we have a space or all feel like we belong. And that is the crux of what I'm trying to do right here at Finestra, but what we all should be striving to do within our four walls, and then sharing that with the broader financial services industry.
Okay. So I've got a couple of more questions around kind of you, but I want to fast forward a little bit, and we'll come back to those in a second to kind of your role. So I guess, you know, you've touched a little bit on your experience kind of throughout your life, career-wise, but why don't you talk about kind of coming into this role at Finestra? What were your aspirations coming into this role?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I was at NCR for so long. It was like 12 years. So I feel like I grew up at one organization. And so just me taking the step into Finestra, that to me was the big arching momentous occasion that I had to, like, this is the obstacle, like, oh my gosh, I'm really taking this step. And I felt like it was something that I had to do for me professionally. Mm. So I don't think it was actually until I had my first meeting with Simon when I joined. And I remember me telling him, like, oh yeah, I'm out, I'm meeting people, I'm, you know, I'm trying to learn the culture. Yep. And, you know, and then he just like stopped me and was like, he said something to the effect, like, no, don't learn the culture. I want you to change the culture. Right. And I was like,
I was like, wow.
And so that really sat with me. And so I guess from that day forward, I aspired to change Finestra's culture for the better, to help us to get to our ambition of being the most loved and inclusive, right? And really changing the game in financial services, right? How can we really be a leader in this space by winning the market, but also leaning into our doing well by doing good? And I think that's where he really, and I don't think, I've never told him this, right? But it's like, but him just saying that one little thing really sparked a flame in me. And now everything I do is all about how are we keeping the things that make us great, right? Before Sarita even stepped in the door, being the most loved and inclusive was already a part of the 3-year journey, right? But when I see those areas where we can evolve, where we can do better, where we can elevate, right? I'm pushing those needles. I'm calling us out. I'm trying to, you know, make us be better, for sure.
And I think that in its, again, I want to keep going back to this. You don't have an easy job. I feel like, you know,
I could have sworn now, a couple minutes ago, you said my job should be easy. You said, yeah, you have an easy job. They laid the foundation, Sarita.
No. I guess, you know, on paper, I guess if you look at what we have, I guess right now, it's, you know, effectively, I mean, look, no place is perfect. And I think that's always a job, isn't it? It's trying to make things as close to perfect as possible, because
it's
never going
to
be perfect.
I think more than anything.
Right.
Like, where's our bar? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what's interesting is the cultures across the world, specifically within Finestra, I guess, are so different. You know, they might be completely different in India, for example, where in North America, they are, you know, completely a different stance, right? How do you go about even navigating someone like that? Like, how do you approach someone's different culture in India versus North America, for example? Like, how would you even go about doing that?
Yeah, it's everything we do. We have to have that our global sunglasses on, looking at it through a DE&I lens and a holistic global lens. And so that's me partnering with our site leaders, with our employee resource group leads, meeting with our COE leaders, meeting with our ELT members, right? Trying to train up our managers and our FLT on inclusive leadership traits, but it's really making sure you have diverse perspectives or representation, right? Especially from the groups that you're looking to implement, whatever the initiative is in, right? Like if you're looking to host a program in India, you kind of need to talk to the people on the ground, right? You can't go in there just with a US, right? My lens is US focused, but the beauty of my background is that I started my career with a global lens, learning global statutory requirements. All of that really helped lay the foundation of how I work in general. And so I think it's more about, like I said, with the difficulty piece is how am I getting everybody involved so that I know who are the people that I can tap into, right? For what and for when, because I just need to make sure that I have representation and I have and understand the voice of the people. And a lot of times we start with the people team, right? Talking to the HRDs in those regions or whatever, but then we'll go to our site leaders, right? Or then we'll go to our employee resource groups to get a pulse, to get a sense of, does this feel right? Does this look right? Does this sound right? But I definitely think we can do more of that as we try to coordinate our initiatives. And that's one of the reasons why I'm looking to travel to different sites, right? To talk to people on the ground, to understand from them directly, what's going on? How can we help? How can we make it better through your lens, through your perspective, right? Through your day-to-day actions.
Challenges I guess are kind of always going to be part of our journeys. And I think yours specifically interests me because you've obviously chosen to take on this role to try and, I guess, overcome a lot of not just your challenges, but people's challenges. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about some of these challenges that you've faced kind of throughout your journey so far and how that's shaped you really and kind of driven your want or need to kind of want to change it across companies?
I think the biggest challenge that I've probably faced in my journey so far has been imposter syndrome. That feeling of am I good enough? Yeah. Will they not take me seriously because I look too young? Do they say, oh, you're so articulate? Are they saying that because I'm black, right? I was raised in an extremely loving environment where I never had to worry about where my next meal was coming from. We always had a roof over our head and food and clothing, right? The necessities. However, I was exposed to poverty and drugs and alcoholism and domestic abuse all throughout my childhood from members of my family or people in the community. So as I grew up, I had a blueprint of what not to do, right? And fortunately for me, I seem to always have someone there that seen something in me. And that was willing to take a chance on me, that cared about me and my future, even when they didn't have anything to gain from it. So when I think back on like my going from like high school time, like Mr. Lucas, he was my high school sociology teacher. He was the one that recommended that I apply for this program to get into Ohio State, right? And I had a full ride scholarship or Kelly and Bernie, they believed in me and they pushed me to think bigger and gave me the confidence that I needed to lead. It was something called, it was a Big 12 conference on Black student leadership. And they were like, Sarita, we should do one, a Big 10. And so then I led a Big 10 conference on Black student leadership, nationwide conference, first ever. Awesome. Or even Tim, he was my career service advisor. And he helped me to understand that HR was the profession that I should try to move into. And he mentored and coached me along my career journey. So these are people that don't look like me, don't come from where I come from. And so, you know, I've been able to overcome challenges by having a strong support system and people that have mentored me, right? And just have helped lift me up, but also just by loving myself, right? So if you love yourself, if you believe in yourself, if you understand the power inside of you, right? Even when those self-doubts creep up, you just got to walk in your truth and just more importantly, surround yourself with your squad, right? People that'll tell you when you're wrong, people that will call me out and tell me when I can do more, people that think differently than me. Like, I love that. I love surrounding myself with people like that.
And that's it. And I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head. You mentioned it, and all these people who have kind of contributed to the positive influences in your life, really. Even now, as an adult, you mentioned Simon earlier in the conversation. Sometimes all you need is a Simon to say, just go do your thing. I think that's so important. And you're 100% right in terms of I think we're always, I mean, even I, as I stand here today, I'm this imposter syndrome thing. I don't think it ever goes away. I think we always have to, like, you know, I try to attribute it to kind of things like anxiety, mental health, that kind of stuff. It will never disappear, but we can figure out ways how we can live with it. And I think that is so important for us to try and figure out and try to work on ourselves with is, okay, I'm always going to feel this way, but how can I try to ease that feeling? How can I work with it? How can I ride along with it? Thank you for sharing your story. First of all, I think that is huge. I think that being able to kind of experience stuff like that and come out the end of it and say, okay, well, I don't want to do this, or this is the way I want to change things, or this is how I want to change the future, is such a big thing. And I think, you know, again, I commend you for it. I don't want this to be a, let's celebrate Sarita, but you know, we should.
But it is because you mentioned the point, like, how can you alleviate some of that, right? And then it turns into like being over-prepared, trying to like over-prepare yourself, or being like, I'm really big, like, okay, how do I dress so that I feel like my best, right? And then, because if you look good, you feel good, then hopefully you perform better, right? If you over-prepare. But those are things you also have to like keep, that's work, right? And that's effort. And that's things that, you know, some people, I'll say women, people of color, right? Those are things we have to really pay 100% attention to, right? Really think about. Because of the perceptions of others. And so it becomes tiring sometimes as well. So we have to really get to a point where, and that's where I think this creating the space for people to just show up as their most authentic self, Like, yes. Okay, Sarita, if you add a couple slang words, people aren't going to think that you're, you know, you're dumb, right? Or if you aren't suited and booted, right? Are people going to think you're this or that? If you wear color in your hair, are people going to think you're ghetto, right? Yeah. Those are real life scenarios that, you know, or women, right? If you're, you have to make sure your dress is fingertip down to the, right? Jeez, or are people going to think you're, you know, out there. So these are things that we have to really think about in our culture and the way that we're interacting. And as we're thinking about the type of culture we're trying to create and if people belong, right? If they feel they belong, can they wear their black nail polish and makeup face or whatever the case may be, right? There's lots of different scenarios about it, but I love that we're talking about these things and bringing it up.
No, and I'm glad we are. And I think this is why I wanted to kind of have you on this podcast is because I know, again, I said this at the beginning, but I knew the moment I started talking to you, I know you would have an opinion on this and, you know, a positive opinion. And I think, not there's a negative or positive, but, you know, I guess something to bring, but cool. Okay. So I've got kind of the final questions that I like to ask on these episodes. And I think they'll kind of give us a nice little rounding off to the episode. So why don't you, I mean, again, you mentioned your kind of youth, you mentioned your career so far and everything. What, knowing what you know now, obviously, and, you know, this is, take it as you are. You know, take it. You know, it's a broad question, so I think answer it as you feel comfortable. What advice would you give to a young you?
Opportunities don't happen; you create them.
Nice. Yeah.
I think I think that's the advice because I feel like I had to learn. You can't just sit around and wait for someone to notice. Like you're a top performer, or, you know. So I had to learn to get very clear first on what I wanted, and then believe that I could get there. And then raise my hand, honestly, to like just do more, right? Join cross-functional projects, be on ERGs, help colleagues in need, have conversations with folks, like expand my networking. Because I feel like most importantly, it's like how are you, but my younger self, like how are you really building those authentic relationships, right? With people across all levels of the organization.
Because
it wasn't until I really started to tap into those things and in my own self-confidence, because it's like your self-confidence, your experience, your network, that's where you'll be able to take your career in your own hands. And from there, the sky is the limit. So yeah, opportunities don't happen. You create them.
What advice would you give to folks, young folks, whoever it is, looking to get into the DEI space?
Yeah. I just say start wherever you are, right? There's no degree or specific profile necessary to do this actual role. And each organization is on a different part of their DE&I journey, right?
Yep.
Depending on where they are, they may need people with different skill sets and different areas of focus. So I would say start where you are, join an employee resource group, get involved, continue to expand your skill set and your competencies.
Yep.
There's lots of different certifications and trainings out there. Be willing to share your ideas, to call things out when it's not right, right? And be a change champion and a role model, right? Yep. I think honestly, that's the biggest, easiest way to get noticed. And then because there's no like specific degree. I know people in this type of role who were in sales or we're in marketing, we're in communications, right? There's all different types. So, and of course, people team or HR field. So you don't have to be in HR. You don't have to come from this type of background to be successful in this type of role. So I just say start where you are.
Nice. And I guess finally, you know, we've had a nice conversation here. I think people can obviously make their minds up and take something away from you. But if you were going to tell people tell people if there was one thing that people should take away from you about you, what would that one thing be?
I truly believe, I think it's a quote, like any life worth living is a life in service to others.
Right.
That is something that I feel like rings true to me. And how I really try to live my life in service to others. And so my husband's in real estate and he was listening to this podcast. I think it's like Ed Milet and I think it was guy Rory Vaden on personal brand. And they mentioned like find your uniqueness and exploit it in service of others. Right. And I feel like that's really what I strive to do and when I lean into the kind of this helping people understand their identities, understanding their uniqueness, that's what I'm trying to do at Finestra. Because also in that podcast, they had mentioned like all of us are most powerfully positioned to serve the person you once were. So I'm constantly thinking about what problem am I solving? Where am I adding value? What more can I do? Yep. And I think if we all just really lean into that concept of understanding the challenges, the obstacles, the setbacks that you've overcame, Yep. Whether that's at university or maybe you didn't get a degree, right? How are you living your divine uniqueness? How are you shining your light? How are you role modeling? And that, because that's what I do. That's what I try to do, at least.
I love that. Oh, Sarita, thank you so much. This is honestly, I never have an expectation on stuff like this. But we were going to have a good conversation. And I guess, firstly, I want to thank you for your time, for even kind of having this conversation with me. I'd like to think we'll have more conversations, because there's so much more that we need to talk about. But thank you so much. I am always in awe of kind of the things that you're doing and kind of what you're trying to achieve. And you know, I know we're always working together on stuff, and I'd like to think that
we're working on something.
Yes. Yeah, always. thank you again for your time. And, I appreciate you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. I had fun.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good one.
Told you it was fun. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Life at Financial Podcast. It's been a pleasure being your host, and I can't wait for you guys to join us in the next episode. Thanks again for listening.